This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hopp, and we're having a fascinating discussion with Dr. Stephen Gundry, author of a very, very thought-stimulating book, The Plant Paradox. Here's what Dr. Terry Walls, author of The Walls Protocol, has to say about this book. Quote, "The Plant Paradox offers a true paradigm shift in the way we think about food. Whether you're paleo, gluten-free, low-carb, or plant-based, Dr. Gundry's profound insights and practical advice will help reverse both autoimmune and neurodegenerative disease." So we laid the groundwork for our discussion here in part two about how to eat selectively of plant foods and animal foods that are free of lectins, which are some of the damaging substances that are present in our diet that subvert our metabolism, that may trigger autoimmunity, that can cause gastrointestinal symptoms. And so you've developed something called the Plant Paradox Program, which is a diet that specifically encourages certain foods and discourages others. Well, when you eliminate the lectins, what's left to eat on the Plant Paradox Program?
Well, all plants have lectins. There's no getting around it. But one of the things we should realize is that it's kind of like when we're watching a college or professional football game. The announcers say, "Okay, let's set up the offense, and let's set up the defense, and here's the defensive line, and here's the cornerbacks." And so there's been actually a balance of power between plants and animals. Whenever they come up with a rather good offense, we've come up with a very good defense against them. And one of the things that's happened is the longer that we have been eating certain plants, the longer that, number one, we have acquired bacteria that are microbiome that actually loves to eat these plant lectins. For instance, believe it or not, there are bacteria that eat gluten. They love gluten. If you stop eating gluten, they leave, and so you could actually make things worse when you reintroduce gluten. But the second thing is, these bacteria, our microbiome, educate our immune system about who's a friend and who's a foe. And again, the longer that you've encountered certain plant species, the longer you've had to have an immune system that basically says, "Oh, yeah, we know these plant lectins. We've been eating them for 10 million years. It's no big deal. We can kind of ignore them." Whereas if you introduce a plant lectin in, say, 500 years, like lectins from America, that to me is speed dating in evolution. And we really haven't had the time to educate our immune system or, for instance, our gut bacteria. Let me just give you an interesting example. We cannot digest seaweed. We need certain bacteria to do that. The Japanese are actually the only known people on Earth that have specific seaweed digesting bacteria. And it's because of their incredibly long, you know, association with using seaweed as a major dietary source. But most of us don't have the bacteria that can digest and interact with seaweed. Interesting.
So it's kind of like just a fiber runs through us, much like cellulose does. You know, we can't we're not termites. We can't digest cellulose. It gives us a little bulk in our stool, but it's not a fuel. It's not something that we can use.
Right, and not even termites can digest cellulose. They have to have bacteria that can do the job for them. In fact, one of the interesting things, almost as an aside, but many of us believe that humans finally became the modern human with the invention of fire, because fire is capable of breaking down cell walls. Before that, all animals had relied on bacteria to break down cellulose. So all plants are completely indigestible without bacteria or without heat to break down the cell wall. And so there's pretty interesting evidence that heat allowed us to eat tubers, things like yams, which are totally indigestible. And tubers and allowed us to actually get a whole lot of calories without a lot of work from our bacterial friends in our intestines. And that is one of the reasons when people look at a gorilla, they have this giant fermentation vat that they look grossly fat. They only have 3% body fat, but it's just this giant fermentation vat to break down the cellulose. But we don't need that anymore. We have a residual fermentation vat in our, you know, colon, but it's nothing compared to a gorilla.
Well, so the foods that are specifically proscribed as opposed to prescribed, they're forbidden, are legumes. They're a culprit here, right?
Yep.
Also, fruits out of season. Among the vegetables, there's a misnomer when we refer to tomatoes as a vegetable because they're actually a fruit, but the nightshades, that species. And that's interesting because certain paleo diets also, Lorne Cordain, for example, not fond of nightshades because of the tendency of nightshades to produce a condition called leaky gut, which is a lectin-mediated effect that attacking the gut wall, causing the tight junctions to open up and allowing intestinal contents to flow into the systemic circulation, creating havoc. So those are some of the things that are suggested to avoid on this diet, correct?
Correct. Yeah, the nightshades are all American plants. And the other thing that most of us, again, forget is that all of us are not from America. We're from Europe, Asia, or Africa. So that means none of the world was actually exposed to American plants and their lectins until 500 years ago when Columbian trade started. And that trade went both to Europe and Africa, but also to Asia. And some of our most beloved foods are actually American lectin-containing plants, like the nightshade.
Potatoes, corn.
Corn, like quinoa, like, interestingly, peanuts and cashews, and even chia seeds. And speaking of Lorne Cordain, years ago we were talking on the phone, and I was telling him how fond I was of chia seeds. And I said, they're superfood. And he said, don't you read the literature? And jokingly, I said, you know I do. And he said, I'm going to send you two papers that show that chia seeds promote inflammation in human beings. And he did. And I said, son of a gun. You know, I hate it when he's right.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I have some of my super autoimmune folks who I call my canaries, who absolutely react to chia seeds and even small amounts of chia seeds. And it makes sense to me now that he explained it to me, because they have their own defense system and they're an American plant and we really have no business eating them. Interestingly enough, goji berries, that darling superfood, are actually American plants. They're also part of the nightshade family. They came from America. They were called the wolfberry, and they were taken to China in trade. And they thrived in China.
So just be careful.
They originally came in the United States.
You also take aim at squash, which for a lot of people is, you know, it's an alternative to potatoes, because potatoes are a nightshade, white potatoes anyway. And so squash has some of these properties that make it undesirable?
So the peel and the seeds have lectins in squash, but the problem with squash is a fruit. Anything with a seed is a fruit. Even an avocado is a fruit, but avocados, luckily, are almost pure fat and the soluble fiber. So they're truly one of the great fruits that you can eat every day. But squash and, for instance, zucchini noodles, they do two things. Number one, they act as if you've hit the ultimate fruit tree and you ought to store fat for the winter. But they also contain lectins in their seeds and peel primarily. So even people, early on, I found that taking cucumbers away from women with high cholesterol would lower their cholesterol rather dramatically. It's because I took their fruit away, which was a cucumber. Yeah.
Now, so one of the kickers, and kind of a surprise as I read your book, is that, you know, you would think, okay, great. Well, it's in an abundance of caution, you know, stay away from fruits and vegetables. Of course, that's not practical. We do want to include those because of their beneficial effects. But it turns out that meat, modern meat, may contain and deliver lectins. So how does that work?
This was one of the things that almost broke my heart. There are a few little comments in the alternative medicine literature on the internet that that people who are eating factory or animals are designed to eat certain foods just like us. But if you feed an animal a food that it's not designed to eat, you will have lectins appear in their flesh. And I found this a little hard to believe, except I should have realized it from learning from my children that I talk about in the book. I was a fellow in pediatric heart surgery at Great Ormond Street in London for a year when my children were young, 5 and 7, and they sorely missed their Kentucky Fried Chicken. And at that time, chickens were fed ground-up fish meal because they had an abundance of fish meal. And the chickens were very pale and, quite frankly, tasted like fish. And so we went across town to Kentucky Fried Chicken, and they both bit into a giant drumstick, and they, you know, spit it out, and they said, "Oh, you know, you tricked us. This is chicken." And I said, no, look, you know, Kentucky Fried Chicken, it's a drumstick. They said, no, this is fish. And it was a big failure. So they were right. The chicken was not a chicken. It was a fish because it was what it ate. And now, unfortunately, I see a number of people, particularly with lupus, that their organic free-range chicken is one of the culprits in their lupus. And I've seen it now enough that when we take their organic free-range chicken away from them, that their residual markers of lupus, like anti-nuclear antibody or double-stranded DNA, finally becomes negative. And we've had a couple that have attempted to reintroduce chicken, and their markers immediately go up. So I think, you know, we are what we eat, but we are the thing we're eating ate.
Well, there's some concern about terminology, too, because, you know, we talk about, you know, happy chickens, you know, free-range chickens, organic, and then there's the term pasture-fed, and that applies to eggs as well. And then there's, you know, grass-fed meat, but it may be grass-fed only in the final stages of production. And so I guess we have to get clearer on the provenance of our animal products to really make a difference.
Yeah, the labeling laws are such that you cannot trust what the label says. The federal government passed a law in 2007 saying that a organic free-range chicken can be labeled so, even if it's kept in a warehouse with 100,000 other chickens, never let outside. And 5 minutes a day, a door is opened that allows them access to a 3-yard by 3-yard patch of grass, which, of course, no chicken goes out into because they wouldn't be stupid enough. And number one, if you're one of 100,000 chickens, it's not likely you'll get to the door in time before it's closed. But this was passed in 2007. So the other thing that's true is all cows at one point in their life eat grass. But you can take a cow that was eating grass for a few weeks and then take them to the feedlot for the rest of their lives and still label them grass-fed, because at one point in their life, they did eat grass.
But they were corn or soy finished, which puts the additional weight on
them. Yeah, exactly.
I was intrigued by the fact that, you know, in contradistinction to the paleo diet, the notion being that, you know, we only eat foods that were present before the Neolithic period, where we began to domesticate animals for dairy, that certain dairy is okay in under your plant paradox program. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. One of the intriguing things, Northern European cows suffered a genetic mutation 2,000 years ago. They began to make a protein in their milk called casein A1. The normal protein in milk is casein A2. It's present in goats, sheep, water buffalo. It's still present in Southern European cows, but almost all cows in the world are now casein A2, because casein A2 cows are hardier, they give more milk, and so they pretty much displace the, almost all cows are casein A1. Mm. So they displace the A2 cows. And one of the interesting things, and I get emails all the time on this, is most people who think they're lactose intolerant, or that milk gives them mucus, they're actually reacting to the casein A1. Mm-hmm. And that's why a great number of my patients early on would tell me that there's no lactose in Italian gelato, because they could go to Rome and have a gelato out on the piazza and they wouldn't get the stomach upset. Mm. And so that proved there was no lactose in Italian gelato. Well, of course, there's plenty of lactose in Italian gelato.
Yeah.
But Italian cows are casein A2s. Mm. And it's always good to get an email that someone who is completely lactose intolerant is now enjoying their A2 milk here in the United States. And lo and behold, there wasn't lactose. It was casein A1.
So we can still enjoy imported cheeses. We can enjoy buffalo mozzarella. We can enjoy goat's milk products, yogurt and cheeses and so on.
Yeah, just in general, most cheeses from France, Italy, and Switzerland are casein A2. Unfortunately, most cheeses from Spain are A1, but the goat cheeses and sheep cheeses from Spain and anywhere are perfectly safe.
So this is it's a little bit like picking your way through a minefield, and there's certainly occasions where you may not become a complete social recluse. So to the rescue comes a product that you developed called Lectin Shield. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that you're not suggesting that people eat with impunity whatever they want and then just take Lectin Shield and will reverse all manner of harm. But for helping people minimize the harm, if they're particularly susceptible to lectins, say they have an autoimmune condition or severe gastrointestinal condition, tell us about Lectin Shield.
Yeah, so I initially invented Lectin Shield for myself because I travel extensively in Italy and the south of France studying cultures, and invariably, even though I know it's going to destroy me or a poor wife who has to be in the car with me, I'll eat pasta or beans over there and pay the price. So there are known compounds that lectins attach to. Again, lectins are sticky proteins, and they target specific sugar molecules that have been well identified. And so I decided to take about 8 of these different compounds and take them on my trips, and even did a few kind of humorous videos of before and after on YouTube. And because, you know, I now have Gundry MD, I made it into capsules. And I made it not with the idea that people could then wantonly cheat. But there are always situations where you're going to a friend's house, you're going out to dinner, that you, for one reason or another, do not want to control the agenda. You don't want to be a nut. And you pop a few Lectin Shield, before you go. And it's not a cure, but it is amazing what absorbing lectins will do. Let me just give you an interesting example. Glucosamine is a sugar molecule that absorbs lectins. Now, the actual molecule that does it is D-acetyl glucosamine, but the stuff you buy at Costco that relieves your joint pain, it relieves joint pain not because of some miraculous thing that happens in your joints, but you're actually absorbing lectins in your intestines, and they, again, don't break through your, don't make leaky gut, and there's impressive evidence that lectins are the cause of arthritis in our joints. So, that's the miracle of how, you know, chondroitin sulfate and glucosamine and MSN work, is because they're lectin absorbers. So,
and that's putaside in the lectin shield along with other specific ingredients. Very cool stuff. Well, okay, you know, so to sum up, for our listeners who are health challenged, and they've been on the paleo diet, and they've been on the Whole 30 diet, and they've been on vegan, macrobiotic, all manner of diets to address the concerns. This offers another opportunity, some insights into why their diets may be failing them. It's a fascinating introduction to the subject of lectins, the hidden dangers in, quote, healthy foods that cause disease and weight gain. And the book is called The Plant Paradox. The author, our guest, Stephen Gundry. And Dr. Gundry, you have a website as well that's very informative. Can you share YouTube videos as well?
Yeah, so you can go to GundryMD.com, or you can go to DrGundry.com. You can go to the GundryMD YouTube channel. I'm posting videos for cooking. By the way, the Plant Paradox cookbook will be out on April 10th.
Oh, great.
It's actually already the number one best pre-seller in vegetable cooking on Amazon. So I'm really excited about that already. And it's 100 new recipes that are user-friendly. They're kid-friendly. They're working mom-friendly. And you don't have to live in California. You can, it can be miserably cold, and we got some great stuff for you. There's even waffles that are totally friendly.
That's great. Well, you know, be sure to have your publicist send me a review copy, and maybe we can do a reprise when the book comes out, because we've got lots more to discuss.
Hey, that'd be great.
That'd be great. Okay. Well, hey, I really appreciate it. I know you're a busy guy, and you continue to see patients with challenging problems, applying the Plant Paradox program and other insights that you've gained in your vast experience working with challenging health problems. Thanks for joining us, Dr. Gundry. It's a pleasure.
I thank you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again when the cookbook comes out.
Indeed. All the best, and congratulations on really some fantastic pioneering work. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.